Now, normally, when we have the blessing of children, we give a message about children. But Charlie, not our little Charlie, but Charlie Graby, gave a message the second Sabbath about that, and it was postponed. So I'm not going to talk about that today. If you want to hear a message about that, go back and listen to Charlie's sermon. It was a good one. Anyway, we're very familiar with the story of Moses. How Moses led the children of Egypt, Israel, out of the land of Egypt. Israel had been slaves to the Egyptians for many, many years. They came to Egypt as free people through Joseph, serving the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. There were 12 sons of Jacob, as we know, of Israel. They were God's chosen people. But they were enslaved as time went on. They became greater and greater, and the Egyptians started to fear them, so they enslaved them. They held them in bondage against their will. These Israelites, these slaves, were taught from day one to obey or to be punished. And then we know the story that God raised up Moses to lead them out of the slavery. He was going to take them to the land He had promised Abraham, the promised land. You know, we know the story of the Exodus, or if not, you can see the movie. But the Israelites left Egypt, and it was an amazing story how they were set free by the hand of God. They were led on a journey through to the promised land. They were going to a land that many just dreamt about. They thought about probably at night. They heard about it. They heard about a redeemer. They heard about someone that was going to set them free. They heard about this person. Years of struggling, years of bondage, years of pain was all of a sudden coming to an end. This Moses had gone to Pharaoh and he got their release. The years of struggling, the years of being in bondage, the years of slavery would now be over. From now on, it was just going to be smooth sailing all the way to the promised land. I wonder if any of them knew when they left Egypt after Passover that year, how actually close they were to this promised land. You know, they didn't have GPS. They didn't have maps. Some of them may have maps, but they didn't know because they didn't have the knowledge of the land. But I wonder how many of them knew how close they actually were. You know, they could have been to the promised land in a matter of weeks. It wouldn't have taken that long if they just would have walked straight over there. I've read anywhere from 11 days to 3 weeks to reach their destination. And that's a large group of people. Now, God is God. God can do whatever he wants to do. God could have made a yellow brick road and had them just walk right over to the promised land. God could have whisked them away. He could have just said, we're free, you're gone, boom, into the promised land. He could have done that. He could do, again, whatever he desired. These people had been suffering day after day, night after night, week after week, year after year, serving the Egyptians. You know, they didn't just work for the Egyptians. They did, but they were slaves to the Egyptians. They had no freedom. They had no, you know, vacation time. They were slaves. You know, when we're baptized, God could just say, you know what? You understand? We're going to dunk you underwater. Your sins are forgiven. Boom. Right to the kingdom. He could do that. But he has not done that either. He's put us, like the Israelites, into a wilderness. You know, the children of Israel walking through the wilderness, they had to be tested. They had to be tried. They had to learn to obey God. They had to learn to obey God not just out of fear. They had to learn to fear God in the correct way. But they had to learn to love God and not obey God just because they're told to obey God. They had to learn to be independent, thinking. They had to learn to obey God with more than just a whip. But they had to learn to obey God with their heart and with their mind. They had a desire. They had to desire to obey God. They had to learn to trust God, learn to believe God, learn, as we heard from John Beam in his message last week, they need to learn to listen to God. But God knew they needed the wilderness. They needed to learn to follow him instead of the Egyptians. And God knows we need to be in the wilderness at times to learn to follow him, to follow his ways, and to learn and grow. You know, God, if you read in Genesis, God took Enoch. Now, Enoch was 365 years old when he was taken. But all it says is Enoch was righteous in all of his ways, and boom, God took him away. He could have done that with us, but he wants us to learn. He wants us to live life. He wants us to live life in the good times and the bad times. He knows that we need to face the wilderness just like our forefathers and our foremothers did in the wilderness. They were faced with challenges. And as we know, as we read, and we're going to read some of these, it's time and time again, they failed these challenges. And boy, they failed miserably, these challenges. The story of Exodus is a fascinating story of God taking a huge group of people, what we would call today a huge dysfunctional family, and training them to walk with him. That's a hard thing for God to do, and always God. It was a huge challenge, and the people failed many, many times. And we think how difficult it is to get 20 people at church to go out to dinner at the same restaurant and not want to kill one of them. It's hard to herd people like that. But you know, we live today in a wilderness. We've come to understand that God and his plan, we have to come out of Egypt and be in this wilderness of this world for a while. We're walking towards that promised land. We all have a walk to walk. We're walking towards that promised land. And sometimes, like the Israelites, we just don't go straight. We kind of wander. We go off track a little bit. We find obstacles that come in our way, and sometimes we run around them, or sometimes they block us. We get discouraged and we complain, and maybe even like the children of Israel, sometimes we want to go back to Egypt because it's easier. Israel had to be shown how to live, how to make decisions on their own, and how to truly, truly follow God. They were raised as slaves. Again, their lives were not their own. They probably had very few decisions to make. They were told what to do, when to do it, and how to do it. God wanted his children to learn to obey him and no one else. He gave them manna, he gave them quail, he gave them several times, he gave them water out of a rock. He cleaned up the water, made it sweet. He protected them, he helped them in battle. And as it says in Deuteronomy 29:5, for 40 years their clothes and their sandals did not wear out. For 40 years. I wonder who the first one that recognized that was. If you think about it, it's like, man, you know what? Don't you need a new pair of sandals? Man, it's been like 25 years. You're right. But they didn't wear out. It's kind of a small thing, but it's kind of cool. God provided for the Israelites. He took them out of a powerful nation and guided them across the Red Sea in a divine miracle. He protected them against the Egyptian army. He was right there all the time. When they get up in the morning, they saw him. When they went to bed at night, they saw him. When they cried out, they saw him. Turn with me to Numbers 11. Numbers 11, and we're going to read most of the time today because I'm doing a lot of Old Testament. We're going to read a lot of in the NIV. But Numbers 11, verse 4. Numbers 11, verse 4 to 6. God had given the Israelites manna. They needed something to eat, and he instructed them on how they should collect the manna every day. On the sixth day, collect double. And so they lived on manna for a while. But as we read, the Israelites eventually wanted more. They wanted meat. Verse 4 from the NIV, it says, "The rabble," interesting word, "the rabble with them began to crave other food. And again the Israelites started wailing and said, 'If only we had meat to eat. We remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost.'" No cost. "Also the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. But now we have lost our appetite. We never see anything but this stupid manna." I added stupid. "But anything but this manna." They had life so great in Egypt, didn't they? It's wonderful being a slave, but they had plenty to eat. They could eat all they wanted. Plenty of vacation time. Life was just great. Verse 10, go down to verse 10, please. "Moses heard the people of every family wailing at the entrance to their tents. The Lord became exceedingly angry, and Moses was troubled. He asked the Lord, 'Why have you brought this trouble on your servant? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? Did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised an oath to their ancestors? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, "Give us meat to eat." I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you're going to treat me, please go ahead and just kill me, God. I can't take it anymore. If I have found favor in your eyes, and do not let me face my own ruin." These Israelites were complaining about the variety in their food. The manna was good, but boy, they wanted more. They wanted onions and leeks. There was so much more back in Egypt. Then even Moses has had enough, and he was complaining. "Did I give birth to these babies? Do I have to carry these babies into the promised land with me? I've had enough of this. I'm tired. These people are crazy, and they're driving me crazy. God, just kill me." The Israelites were given food to eat. They didn't have to grow the food or hunt for the food. It was provided for them every day. It was still not good enough. They wanted more. They wanted more variety. And as verse 10 says, it was every family was wailing at their tent that they wanted to go back. To go back to bondage, to go back to slavery. They complained so much that Moses was ready to throw in the towel. "I'm done. I am tired of this people, of these people." You know, in their walk to the promised land, they ran into some trials. They flunked a few tests, and their leader was about to give up on them. But God was still with them. You know, we can walk on our journey. We have tests. We have trials that come our way. We have 2020 that came our way. You know, some just happen and others happen because we make wrong decisions. You know, we can look at the world and we can long for some of the lights of the world. And I think with our young people, we've all been there. And even some of us old people. But we see that there's maybe some excitement in the world that we don't have here in God's church. They seem to be having more fun out there. They can do this, they can do that. They can do this on Friday night, they can do this on Saturday. They go to the football games, they can do this. It seems more exciting, it seems more enticing. Sometimes they feel that the church, in the church, is all that we do is eat manna. "It's boring here. The people are boring. I can't find a good mate because nobody's cool enough for me." The world offers so much more. They offer meat and vegetables, ice cream, cake, and other desires. You know, the Israelites had to learn to be content with what God was giving them at the time. It was a learning process. He was walking with them to the promised land. They had to learn to trust trust God and obey God. They had to know, they had to learn that his way was the best for them, even though there may have been some restrictions. Again, restrictions, laws, commandments, designed to better their lives, designed to help them. They had to learn that God had these rules and laws because God loved them. He was not a harsh God like their slave masters, but he was a loving, merciful God. And our young people and our old people, we all need to learn the same thing. We need to trust God, to believe in him and know that he loves us and cares for us. Nothing the world offers, nothing the world offers is more important, is worth it. If you go over a few more chapters to Numbers 13. This is, as we know, this is going to be when the Israelites had been in the wilderness for just about a year or so. They were instructed by Moses, and Moses instructed them to send spies into the promised land to check it out. They're on the edge of the promised land. They've been waiting for this time all the time. And said, you know what, let's go in there. I'm going to send 12 spies in there. They're going to be in there for 40 days. Check it out to see when we're ready to move in. See how it is. If you go down to 13, verse 26. Make sure I'm in the right place. Numbers 13. Okay, I am. Okay. They came back to Moses and Aaron and the whole Israelite community at Kadesh in the desert of Paran. There they reported to them and to the whole assembly and showed them the fruit of the land. They gave Moses this account. We went into the land to which you sent us, and it does flow with milk and honey. It's gorgeous. It is wonderful. There's milk, there's honey, there's fruit. Look at this fruit. But the people who live there are powerful, and their cities are fortified and are very large. We even saw descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites live in the Negev. The Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites live in the hill country. And the Canaanites live near the sea and along the Jordan. It's great. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. But man, there's a lot of people there, and they look like they could be tough. Then Caleb silenced the people before Moses and says, we should go up and take possession of the land, for we can certainly do it. He says, we've done it before. God's opened up doors for us all over the place. We can go in there and take it. But the men who had gone up with him, 10 of them, said, we can't attack those people. They are stronger than we are. And they spread among the Israelites a bad report about the land that they had explored. They said, the land we explored devours those living in it. All the people we saw there are of great size. We saw the Nephilim there. The descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we looked the same to them. These people are huge. They're giants. We're going in there. We can't stand up against them. We can't go in there. We're going to kill ourselves. They're going to kill our families. Again, this is the land, the promised land that God had promised them years and years. When they were in Egypt, this is the land they dreamt about, the land of milk and honey. This is the land of freedom that they had waited so long to enter. 10 of the spies came back spreading bad news. Maybe today we'd call it fake news. But they came back spreading bad news. Yes, the land was rich. It was flowing with milk. It was flowing with honey. The fruits and the vegetables are amazing. It's beautiful. But we can't go. We'll not be able to live there because the people are powerful. The people are huge. We look like grasshoppers to them. They are giants. We cannot face these giants. There's no way we can go in there. God is good. God's great, but come on, these are giants. These are huge creatures. They're massive. They said, the land we explore devours those living in it. We will not survive if we go into that land. We will die. God would not be able to protect us if we go in there. That's what they're saying. God will not be able to protect us if we go in there. Let's go on to chapter 14. Verse 1. That night the members of the community raised their voices and went and wept aloud. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, "If only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Why is he killing us? Why is he trying to kill us? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to each other, "We should choose a new leader and go back to Egypt." You know, I'm a father of three. And raising my boys, if I had, you know, if that came up a couple times, I might be a father of two or less. You've had enough sometimes. But haven't we heard this before? Why is God so mean? Why is he doing this to us? Why is he bringing us here just to kill us? Just to kill us. Our wives and our children will be plundered. Why does God hate us so much? That's what they're saying. I don't trust God. I don't believe God. God cannot protect my family if we go across into that promised land. I'd rather go back and be a slave in Egypt than to be in that land. You know, we read this and we think, how stubborn. How foolish these people were. They're not getting it. God freed them. He took them out of that land. He provided absolutely everything for them. He fed them. He watched over them. How dare that he expect them now to go into the so-called promised land and die? So, you know, instead of blaming themselves, their lack of faith, they blame Moses. Moses led us here. Moses brought us here. We need a new leader. They were not looking to the leader. The leader was God. Moses was his instrument. Now, can we be honest? Hopefully we can, because we're here. Do we not get this some way at times? In little different ways in our lives. God gives us everything. He gives us life. We're all breathing air, oxygen. We're in this great country. We're in this church where we can worship together. Yet at times we forget that. And we complain. We lose faith. We lose our trust in him. Sometimes we listen to the 10 bad spies instead of the 2 good spies. We want to go home. We want to go back to Egypt instead of facing the giants. Let's read on to verse 5. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among them, those who had explored the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite assembly, "The land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and will give it to us. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. Do not be afraid of them." Strong words from 2 against 10. We can do this. We can go in there. We can take them. We can knock them out. God is on our side. If the Lord is pleased with us, he will lead us. They had strong faith. They knew that if they pleased God, nothing was impossible. The land flowing with milk and honey, with fruit, with prosperity, with freedom, was theirs for the taking. They just had to have the faith to get up and go. God never lets them down. Now on to verse 10. But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. Then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. it's like, uh-oh, now we did it. The Lord said to Moses, how long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe in me in spite of all the signs I performed among them? I will strike them down with the plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they. Now remember, this isn't the first time God has said this. When it came down from Mount Sinai, they were rejoicing, you know, they had the idol. A couple times God said, I'm done with these people. These are your people, Moses. You need to take care of them. And Moses said, they're not mine. They're babies. But Moses did say to the Lord in verse 13, if you do this, the Egyptians will hear about it. By your power, you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell the inhabitants of this land about it. They have already heard that you, Lord, are with these people, and that you, Lord, have been seen face to face, that your cloud stays over them, and that you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. If you put all these people to death, leaving none alive, the nations who have heard this report about you will say, the Lord was not able to bring these people into the land he had promised them, an oath, so he slaughtered them in the wilderness. You know, the Israelites had pushed God. He had had it with the constant rebellion and the constant complaining and the lack of faith and the lack of trust in him. Moses continued in verse 17. Now may the Lord's strength be displayed, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love and forgiving sin and rebellion. Yet he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. In accordance with your great love, forgive the sin of these people, just as you have pardoned them from the time they had left Egypt until now. It's an amazing thing for Moses to say. Moses here was a type of Christ. Again, he was the Redeemer, brought him out of Egypt. Now he was interceding on their behalf to the Father. He asked God to forgive them again for the same sins they've been committing since day one they left Egypt. In verse 20, the Lord replied, I have forgiven them as you asked. I have forgiven them. It's an amazing turnabout, but it shows how God's great love, God's great mercy for his people. Moses interceded on their behalf, and God says, I have forgiven them as you asked. Now, as we know, we're going to read, he forgave them, but there was still going to be some punishment merited out. I find that scripture amazing as he was going to wipe them out. Then Moses interceded and helped change his mind. I mean, it's how amazing God is. Verse 21, though, God is saying, nevertheless, as surely as I live and as surely as the glory of the Lord fills the whole earth, not one of those who saw my glory and the signs I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness, but who disobeyed me and tested me 10 times, not one of them will ever see the land I promised an oath to their ancestors. No one who has treated me with contempt will ever see it. And down in verse 26, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, how long will this wicked community grumble against me? I have heard the complaints of these grumbling Israelites. So tell them, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you all the very thing I heard you say. In this wilderness, your bodies will fall. Every one of you, 20 years old or more, who was counted in the census and who has grumbled against me, not one of you will enter the land I swore with uplifted hand to make your home, except Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. None. And down to verse 35, I, the Lord, have spoken, and I will surely do these things to this whole wicked community, which has banded together against me. They will meet their end in the wilderness. Here they will die. So we think about that. These people left Egypt. The celebrations. We're free. We're going into the promised land. God is guiding us. He sent this servant Moses to lead us out of Egypt, out of slavery. They went through the wilderness. They get right up to the edge of the promised land, right up to the very edge. and they don't go in. And God says, now none of you that are 20 years old and over are going to go in. You're not going to make it into the promised land. As God said, they, the Israelites, had banded together against God, telling him that they did not trust him or believe him. They did not have faith enough to go into the promised land and face those giants. They now would die in the desert rather than see the promised land. God knew that Israel had a lot to learn before going into the promised land. He knew there would be tests and trials they had to go through. They had to learn to trust God, to trust God completely on their own. They had to walk in faith, knowing that God would take care of them. Time and time again, as we read, they complained. They forgot. They lost their faith. Time and time again, they wanted to go back home to Egypt where it was safe. You know, our lives are similar. God has called us out of slavery, out of this world, and he placed us in a wilderness. He called us out of the world, but we're still in the world. We're not supposed to be part of the world, but we're still in the world right now, making our way through this wilderness into his kingdom. He gives us a clear path. He shows us the way. He shows us how to walk. Yet we falter at times. And sometimes we want to go back to Egypt, because sometimes this way can be tough. It can be difficult. It can be hard. We can lose faith. We can forget all that God has done for us. And we can all do that. I know I've done it many times. You get down, you get discouraged. You're thinking so much on one thing, and you forget that God is always there. He's always with us. You know, we have our own giants to face, and sometimes we run away. We run away instead of facing these giants. Last week, Dr. Ross gave a surprisingly good message. I'm just kidding. He always gives a good message. Anyway, he gave a good message on David and Goliath. And it was reading through 1 Samuel. You know, we read through the story in 1 Samuel 17. Goliath was a giant. He was a trained soldier, trained to kill. His spear, as we heard last week, weighed about as much as Sarah does. He said it. You can ask him how much that is. Anyway, Goliath was a huge giant, and he berated Israel. And we read this last week in 1 Samuel 17:10, and you don't have to turn there. We read it last week. Then the Philistines said, "This day I defy the armies of Israel. Give me a man and let us fight each other." On hearing the Philistines' words, Saul and all the armies were dismayed and terrified. They were terrified of this giant. Israel was still afraid of giants. They were afraid of giants going into the promised land. They were still afraid of giants. They had wanted a king. God gave them a king in Saul. And he too was afraid of the giants. You know, last week when Dr. Ross was giving his message, I wrote at the top of my notes, Israel is still afraid of giants. And today, sometimes we're still afraid of giants. They could not enter the promised land the first time because of fear of the giants. Now, many years later, they were still afraid of this giant. There was still a lack of faith, a lack of trust in God. This was Israel, God's people. They had to remember the stories. They had won battles. God was with them, pretty much. But then along comes this young man, David, to the rescue. As we read last week, it bears reading again this week, and I'll read it in 1 Samuel 17:46 to 47. David said to the Philistine, "You come against me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I'll strike you down and cut off your head. This very day I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds and the wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. All those gathered here will know that it is not by sword or spear that the Lord saves, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give all of you into our hands." David knew it was God. David knew it wasn't his slingshot. It wasn't his aim. It was God who was going to deliver Goliath, deliver the Philistine army to Israel. You know, if his ancestors, our ancestors, would have had the same faith, they would have gone into the promised land that was promised to them. You know, we face giants. We face the Goliath every once in a while in our life. You know, as was said last week, if we go it alone, we won't make it. We need the help of Jesus Christ. We need the help of one another. We need the help of the family of God. But if we go with God, if we go with help, we'll slay that giant every single time. You know, the children of Israel eventually made it into the promised land. They had to spend an extra 40 years in the wilderness, but they made it. If you turn to Joshua, Joshua 1, I'll just read this quickly. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give to them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors and give to them. Verse 7, be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and courageous. Do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. God was telling them, reassuring them, that he will be with them. He said, do not be afraid. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Now on to Joshua 4, verse 4. The Israelites had crossed the Jordan River as a group. Remember, there were 2.5 tribes that stayed on one side. But God told the men, the mighty men, you're going to go with us. You're going to go over there until everyone is safe. We're going over there together. We're doing this as a group, as a nation. We're going across the Jordan. Joshua 4:4, after they had all crossed. So Joshua called together the 12 men he had appointed from the Israelites, one from each tribe, and said to them, go over before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan. Each of you is to take up a stone on his shoulder, according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites, to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the Jordan was cut off before the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. These stones are to be memorable to the children of Israel forever. Now on to verse 19. They're across the Jordan. On the 10th day of the first month, the people went up from the Jordan and camped at Gilgal on the eastern border of Jericho. And Joshua set up at Gilgal the 12 stones they had taken out of the Jordan. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry ground. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all the peoples of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, and so that you might always fear the Lord your God. Israel was now in the promised land. This time they went on faith. They believed God. They trusted God. They went in as one group, as a unit, across the river, and they set up a stone memorial so that their children would know and understand what they did, and that God had opened the Red Sea, that God had opened the Jordan. They went in together. Now, what can we learn from these stories of our ancestors, these children of Israel. I only have two extra points. Number one is we have to learn to face and defeat our giants, whatever that giant may be. We all have giants in our life that we need to face. The year 2020 has been a giant for a lot of us. The pandemic came out of nowhere. It hit us all in the face. Each of our lives changed to some degree because of that. But if we let 2020 become too big of a giant, I see so many times in reports how bad 2020 was. Oh, I can't wait till 2020 is over. I can't wait till we get to 2021. But if we let 2020 become too much big of a giant, God is still in charge. We can spend so much time listening to the 10 bad spies that we do not hear the two good spies. We have hope. We have a future. You know, God's in charge, and there's no giant too big for him. Whether it's COVID, whether it's the election, whether it's anything else Satan can throw in our way, it is not bigger than God. And I wish I could say 2021, 22, 23, 24 would just be smooth sailing, but I believe sometimes the giants are going to get bigger. And we have to rely on God. He has the weapons, and he will give us the weapons, whether it be a slingshot full of pebbles, whatever we need to defeat those giants. You know, I think we can all sit back and list in our homes all the bad things that happened in 2020. I know I can. I can sit back there and name several different things that happened to our family, to other people I know, that happened in 2020. There's been a lot of nasty things. But I can also sit, turn on the lights, and think about the blessings of 2020. You know, we had a grandson born in January of 2020. I lost a job in 2020, but it turned out I got a better job in 2020. There are blessings of 2020. We were able to keep the Feast of Tabernacles this year. A lot of us thought we weren't going to be able to keep the Feast of Tabernacles together. We had over 1,000 people in Utah keeping the Feast of Tabernacles. And there were people in Florida. We were able to keep the Feast of Tabernacles together, most of us. A huge blessing. When I look around this auditorium, we have families, several families that were not even with us a year ago. They didn't know this way of life, and now they're walking with us. They're here today, understanding. That's a blessing. It's a huge blessing. It's a wonderful blessing. Families that are finding their walk with God in this way of life. They're beginning to understand there's something different out there. They, with us, all have giants that we're going to face. You know, I was going over my head, but at least we had two baptisms. I know for sure this year we had Deanna and Leslie. We had five. I hibernated the first 5-6 months. We had five? I apologize to the other three. That's terrible when you're in your late 40s. But it's a blessing when I think, and now we have five people that have committed themselves to this way of life, walking with God, wanting to do this, facing their giants. And you know what? They committed themselves to God, the Father, and Jesus Christ. And they're a part of the congregations here to grow and learn together. It's a huge blessing. So we have giants to face. We're going to face those giants. But we can focus while we're facing those giants. We need to focus on the positive. Focus on the good things. Focus on the two spies. On the good news. There is good news out there. We can get so negative with the bad news. The second point is that we have to go as a church. We need to go into the promised land together. Now, I understand this is an individual race as we're walking with God, going into God's kingdom. But God called us into a church, a group of people to worship together to serve together, to help one another together. You know, we're not going this alone. God wanted each one of his children of Israel to go into the promised land, and he wants each of us one as the same way, but he wants us to go as a group, a body, a church, a part of the church, a part of the body of Christ. We need to be together. We need to work together. I'm not a builder, and I never will be. But I know if you're putting something together, let's say if you're going to put up a brick wall, you're building this brick wall, and if some of the bricks are missing, it's not going to be very stable. If those bricks are continually missing, the building's integrity won't work. It could cave in. And that's what we have at church. We're building a wall. We're building a church. We have a family. And we need every brick in place. We need the bricks together so that we can build and grow as a church, as a unit. We need to be together at church to help one another, to encourage one another. We have to have the attitude of the two good spies, Joshua and Caleb, to look for the good and tune out the bad. You know, there's been a lot of things going on this year. And I guarantee in 21, 22, and so forth, there's going to be a lot of things. Each person is going to have to rely on other people to help them. Yes, our walk with his God, with the Father, and with Jesus Christ. But he called a nation. He grew a church. He started a church in Acts 1. He's worked with people. He's worked with church. He's worked with some organizations over the years. He's worked with people together, building a family together of unity. And we need to be together. We need to help people. We need to encourage people. And we can't listen to spies telling us that we can't do it. Because we can do it. We can face any giant out there with God the Father on our side, with Jesus Christ on our side. There's no giant too big for us. Individually and as a church. This church has been attacked by the state of California. It's been attacked by other people. We've had ministers have come and gone. They've split. They've taken people. Satan is always active and he's out there. He puts a giant and he makes it bigger, hairier, and uglier. I don't know why they always get hairier when they get uglier, but they do. But these giants are out there, and we have to learn to defeat these giants, to take them down, to take them out. Some of us are facing some really large giants in our life. Whether it's a loss of job, whether it's health crisis, or the loss of a loved one, these giants seem so large and so hard to conquer. And sometimes we may not feel it's worth it. We get discouraged. We think, can I keep fighting? Can I do this? I'm discouraged. I'm down. I'm depressed. But you know, we just read about Moses. Moses was discouraged. He said, God, kill me. David got weary. He cried out for help. Elijah got tired. I want to die. There's no one out there, God, but me. And God said, there's 7,000 haven't bowed their knee to Baal. Jonah got angry. He ran from God. And then when Nineveh repented, he got angry again. Jeremiah wrestled with loneliness, with feelings of defeat. Even Jesus Christ was anguished about what lay ahead of him. You know, three times in the garden, he asked his Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Again, if it be your will. You know, each of these great leaders had to rely on God and had to put their faith and their trust in God. David was a king of a nation. Jeremiah, a prophet. Jonah, a prophet. Elijah, one of the greatest prophets out there. They got discouraged. It happens. But they went to God and said, I need help. I need that encouragement. I need that extra amount of love and support today. And I think Jesus needed his disciples. He kept going back. Why are you sleeping? I need encouragement, guys. I need encouragement. We all need that encouragement. We need that encouragement from one another to help through this next year, through the following years, growing as a church. You know, for me, 2020 has been an interesting year. But for me, and this is just me, it's a wake-up call for me. I can look at it two ways. I can look at it negative. I can look at it positive. But I also understand that I have to be prepared for every giant that steps in the way of me and my family and my friends and my church and my congregation. Not my congregation, our congregation. But I take ownership in that. We have to make sure that no giant is too big for us. We have to be prepared for any giant that is in our way. You know, I've read this before, Isaiah 41:10. It's one of my favorite scriptures. Isaiah 41:10. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. You know, when we're down, we're discouraged, we can ask for help. We can also ask God, give me your hand today. I need your hand to help me through this. There's a giant in my path, and I need help. I need encouragement. You know, we've talked about the children of Israel today walking in the wilderness to be tested, to learn to trust God, to have faith in God, not to give in to fear. Because we know our forefathers, because of their unbelief, because of their fear, because of their lack of trust, they did not make it into the promised land, and their children had to wait 40 long years. We can have the faith of David. As David rushed toward Goliath, David had the heart of God. If you turn with me to Psalm 27. Psalm 27, verse 1. The Lord is my light and my salvation. Whom shall I fear? The Lord is the stronghold of my life. Of whom shall I be afraid? When the wicked advance against me to devour me, it is my enemies and my foes who will stumble and fall. Though an army besiege me, my heart will not fear. Though war break out against me, even then I will be confident. One thing I ask from the Lord, this only do I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze on the beauty of the Lord and to seek him in his temple. David was constantly ready. He got down, he got discouraged, but he had his slingshot ready to take out that giant. He trusted in God. He had faith in God. He had hope in God. And I know, as a church, as a congregation, as we face difficulties, as we face trials, I know that if we walk with God, if we trust with God, if we believe God, we will face any giant that comes our way. We can walk into that promised land together.